Hello, and welcome to the Well Collab Feminine Leadership Podcast. I am Tammy Zadunik, founder of the Well Collab, and your host for today. Our podcast features feminine leadership principles and women leading both in their professional and personal lives. Let's get started. How are you today?
You know what? I'm going to be really honest. I'm kind of bitchy today.
Perfect. I love a good bitchy podcast. I'm here for that.
Well, see, I'm feeling better now that I'm like here with you, but I don't know. There's just, I'm not going to lie. I forgot. I like write my calendar out every week and this somehow didn't make it onto my calendar.
Love it.
And so I was like going to go work out at 8:30 after I did some work. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have a podcast recording I need to get ready for. So I was like,
I love it. Bitchy and unprepared. This is my favorite.
Yes.
This is like my jam.
Yes. Yes. And I'm bitchy because I was unprepared.
You'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this is exciting. Can you first just tell us a little bit about your business?
What I do is I'm a creative director and brand strategist. Those are new titles that I'm giving myself.
I really like them.
Yeah, thank you.
They feel right for what you do, having worked with you.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's like I'm stepping into owning that. That's something that's new because I've been doing this for 13, 14 years now, and you know, when people ask, like, what do you do? I'm like, I'm a graphic designer. And it's like, okay, that's not actually what I do. So creative director, brand strategist, and worthiness coach. So I work with individuals and businesses on really focusing in on what they actually really want to create with their business and their life and combine that together through branding, through systems, through just figuring out like how can you create a sustainable life for yourself, a sustainable business in a way that is really a true expression and extension of you.
Isn't that what we all want?
Yeah, it's really difficult to get to, though.
Yeah, we want to be able to be who we are, make money, do what we love. Mm-hmm. We just want all the boxes checked.
Yes, and it sounds so simple, but really it is like a grueling personal growth, healing experience that we have to go through usually to get there. Not everybody, but a lot of people.
Yeah, you're right. Not everybody. But I think when you're doing it in this way, that's really with integrity.
Yes.
You do sort of have to do that. It's like having, I always liken entrepreneurship to having children, but I actually think entrepreneurship is like has been a greater test for me than having kids.
Oh,
because my kids love me and I love them. And there's this love, hormonal, physiological connection always between us. Mm-hmm. And we'll always love each other, even if we're arguing.
Right.
It's not quite the way it works with clients and business. Like you cannot screw up. Like, and that, I don't mean that obviously you can screw up, but it feels at times like you can't screw up or you're going to lose it. Like there can be a lot of fear.
Oh, for sure. There's tons of fear. There's tons of scarcity that comes up. There's tons of, oh my gosh, like just like worthiness stuff that comes up. I mean, for me,
it is worthiness. That's what it comes down to.
And like abandonment and all of these things that you think when you start a business, you're like, it's just going to be this like fun thing and rainbows. I'm going to do what I love every day.
I have this great product. And isn't everyone just going to know how passionate I am about it? And they're just going to believe me and buy it because I care so much.
Exactly. I'll just put one post out and everybody will.
They're going to run to me because I feel it so much deep within my heart and soul. And they will know and I won't even have to tell them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? If only it worked that way.
Right.
So this is actually perfect because I feel like we are talking about marketing, branding. We're talking about selling. Ultimately, we're talking about selling a lot today.
Yes.
And how to sell without losing ourselves in the process and feeling dirty and like we need a shower. So that's exactly right because that kind of selling is scarcity and fear-based selling.
Yes.
So can you talk to me a little bit about the different ways that people sell?
Okay. Yes. I'll give a little bit of like background from what I know in about marketing and kind of like marketing psychology, selling psychology. So how it used to work is it was very like fear-based. So it was a lot of, and I think people were just doing this in a way that it was effective, right? I don't think people were intentionally going out to harm people. Maybe some people were and using it for their gain. But coming at it in a very like playing and preying on people's fears and using kind of like scare tactics or pressure and using the psychology that people knew about how people operate and their wounds, like abandonment wounds, right? Okay, well, let's just like create a codependent relationship then with this person or this product. And then you feel like your worth is attached to that. So then you have to like keep buying it, or that's going to be the solution that is going to fix it and give it all to you, which really nobody can give that to you except for yourself.
Like, would an example be like diet culture? I'm just trying to think of like, what would be like a tangible example that we could have for this to help people sort of understand this fear-based?
Yeah. So a lot of times, you've probably seen this before in marketing where it's talking to pain points.
Like, your business will fail unless you do these few things.
Exactly. And there's actually, that's a great example because a lot of people do use that type of language.
Yeah.
It creates this like codependent attachment. And it was really, it worked really well for people. You know, it was very successful for people to be able to play into that fear tactic.
Yeah.
And play into people's wounds. Yeah, exactly. And they were able to make a lot of money and not actually deliver on a product or keep it in a cycle where it's like giving somebody just enough so that they feel like they made, they had a change or made a difference, but then actually, no, I need to keep on going with this product or with this person because now if I don't, I'm never actually going to be like whole and worthy.
Oh, I feel like people must have been so happy that they figured out that tactic in business. We figured it out. We have the way. We've found this. Now we're going to make money forever. And no one's going to be able to leave us because they need us. We've created them to have to use our product.
Exactly. And again, it's not to shame anybody in this. Like, if these are marketing tactics that you were taught, I was taught them. I led a course that taught these at one point
awareness.
In life.
It's just awareness.
Yeah. And it's, what, like you said, when people understood this, it's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And then they start teaching other people
how
to do this. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's super effective. And there was the twist that it was very ethical. So you're helping people. You're helping people get out of their fears. You're helping them. You're empowering them, you know, and like you're able to continue to keep helping them.
Right.
Was the thing. So it was all, let's target their fears, understand their fears, do the research, really get to know them, speak directly to that and show how you are the only solution out of it.
Right.
So there's still some of that present. It's still present, but it's modified now. In a more ethical way.
Yeah.
Because there's still psychology roots. There's still the want to help people and be of service.
Right.
But now what's mixed into it is people have become aware of this and that, okay, that's actually manipulation tactics. We don't actually want to keep preying on people. And we want to actually lift them up and show them that they are the solution to get themselves out of this and equip them with the tools so they're not dependent on it.
Like, any product should bring people in, help them, and then set them free.
Mm-hmm.
Like, allow them to feel like they need this. This is helping them.
Yes.
And it actually is helping them. And then they're actually able to walk up, like, on their own. Like, something changes. There's, like...
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, there's things that we're going to use, like, forever. Like, skincare, I will say.
Definitely.
That's an example. Like, you're going to use that. But say you had hormonal acne or something like that you're dealing with. Well, you should be able to get the product that helps cure that or hire the person that is going to work on the underlying issues to help you cure that. And then you move on to just using...
Like a maintenance.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and it's not to say that you can't work with people long term if that person's like really supportive to you too. But what's really important to look at in marketing and the way that we market ethically is, are we giving autonomy to people?
Yeah, I was just about to say that. It's about choice, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, move us into this more ethical marketing model.
And I'll say I am not like a proclaimed expert.
Sure. I've asked her to share about what she knows today.
Yeah.
There will be a conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are people who are very well educated in this. I have a couple people that I really love. One of them is my coach, Rachel Turner.
Awesome.
So she's a trauma-informed business coach. And so the way that, I'm trying to remember what exactly she says, but there's like three points in it. One of them is consent. So always giving people consent. And always getting people, sorry, always getting consent from people. Yeah. So a good example of this is, you know, if lots of people are like, oh, mark it in the DMs. That's a big thing, right?
Right.
Well, right. You don't want to just go necessarily and just start blasting people in the DMs and being like, hey, I think you'd be a really great fit for this course that I have. Like, yeah. We've all got those annoying things. And sometimes it's really genuine, and that's okay if you already have a personal relationship. But popping in and just being like, oh, I was like intuitively led to reach out to you, and I think you need a reading. Would you be like, I've got those before from people, like psychics or like stuff like that, where they just like pop in and they're like
were you though?
Yeah,
exactly. Like, how many people you're intuitively led to do a reading for?
Exactly.
If people are trusting their intuition to reach out to you, you have intuition too, and you can tell when it's not yes. sitting right. People know when they're being marketed to you in a way that's not sitting right for them. They feel it.
And coming back to the autonomy thing and the consent thing, you have the right to say no.
Yes.
Like, just because somebody else had an intuitive hit doesn't mean that means that your intuition all of a sudden like goes out the window.
But it's causing you to second guess your intuition if you think about it that. That's actually what they're doing is causing you.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because, and I want to come back to what you're saying, this consent, but I recently was reaching out with the Well for an event in Toronto. I met them at a retreat, and I'm even feeling kind of bad, even though I have met them in person and actually genuinely really want to reconnect with them in Toronto.
Yeah.
But you still sort of feel like, oh my goodness, I'm like coming into your DMs and I'm inviting you to this event. Like, are you even okay with me? Like, how's this feeling for you right when you see it?
And it's not to feel bad.
No, like, but I am. I'm just saying. You should therapy me. Tell me.
Hit me. Well, okay. Let me ask you some questions. What is the language? Like, you kind of started. What's the language that you're using around it?
I'm like, hey, I don't know if you remember me. We were in a retreat together and, you know, we're hosting this event in Toronto and I'd really like to see you and I'd love for you to come and here's the invite. No pressure. I'm in no way like doing anything, you know, too forceful.
Yes.
But I feel like maybe I should say, do you mind if I invite you to an event?
I think what you put is really great. I love the phrase no pressure. That in and of itself, those two words can be so alleviating. I was just talking with a trainer yesterday. Like, we were going back and forth doing DMs. And I'd entered a giveaway that they're running. And they just asked me some questions, like, what would you like to work on if you won the giveaway? And so I told them. They came back and said, oh, I could help you with this. Like, if you don't win, would you be interested in learning more about this? Like, I'm just really excited and I know I could help you with this. Like, no pressure whatsoever. And I was just like, wow, okay.
My choice. This is my choice.
Exactly. And then he said it again later because I was just really honest and I said, you know what? I'm super interested. I've been watching you for a while, but like, I just had a bunch of unexpected personal expenses pop up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is going to be the right timing. And he just came back and was like, you know what? Let's just have the call. See if it's not the right timing. That's totally okay. At least you'll have the info for next time.
Sure.
And I was just like, okay, I feel safe.
You feel safe to say no to
exactly.
him.
And I feel safe going into this call now that I've expressed myself and where I'm at. And I know that there's no expectations on their end. So no pressure is like two words that you can add in that can just be such a relief on a person's nervous system when they read it.
I want to say those words, no pressure. I know that I've been told in the past. So if we move back to this other kind, that's like you're lacking confidence. You can't give them an out. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking about how harmful that is.
Yeah.
And how I felt that harm and how this is light and it's about abundance and that there will be enough. And maybe partially it's reframing or redefining what success is.
I think it's, I want you to speak more to that.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, we were talking about the well intake and you're all of a sudden thinking in your mind that you had an expectation of numbers being a certain amount for enrollment and the numbers were this amount. And because a definition of success was this larger number, then this smaller number then doesn't feel like success. When the smaller number actually is success. And if we can redefine and reframe it and think this is a huge success, like one person, two, three, like that's a huge success. Then I'm not coming at things from a place of lack and becoming this desperate marketing.
Yes. You nailed it. That's exactly what it is when we are coming at a sales call or a DM or anything out of desperation. People can feel that. If we're coming at it from lack, if we're coming at it from scarcity, it's the same thing with competition, right? Like, once those feelings of, like, envy or jealousy or not enough to go around starts to show
or
up.
Or failure. We suck our offering. We must not know what we're doing. The internal things, too.
Which is so hard when we're in the initial stages of our business.
Oh, my goodness.
We don't have that external validation yet to really, like, show
build
us.
Build our confidence and show us that our offering is really valuable.
And we have to be, like, our own hype
person. Oh, my goodness.
Person.
Oh my goodness.
It's so intense. Unfortunately, like, surround yourself with... You have to, yes. And, like, surround yourself with people who support you. That's, like, one of the biggest things. But, like, it's always an internal game. And so I think when we're looking at ways of ethically selling, it comes back to, okay, well, what is our relationship like with money? What is our relationship like with scarcity and abundance and lack mentality and, you know, trusting that there's enough to go around? And not being dependent on somebody else to give us the validation.
Mm-hmm.
Not being dependent on the sale to show us, like, oh, I'm successful now.
100%. That's what it is. I think that's what it is.
Which is so hard.
That's the redefining of success.
Yeah.
Like, do I believe in what I'm doing? Do I believe in my offering? Do I believe in myself?
Mm-hmm.
And do I think that I'm providing something that is valuable?
Yeah.
Then I'm going to put it out there into the world because I know it's worth it and people need it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of it being letting the external validation tell me that the product's valuable.
But it's so hard, right? In like our world where it's like success metrics, vanity metrics, everything's just how many likes did I get?
Instant.
How many? Yeah.
People think business is instant.
Oh my gosh.
They think that if they think the offering's bad if people don't buy it right away, rather than thinking that maybe they just haven't told enough people.
Right?
Like, sales to me is just telling people what you're excited about.
Over and over and over and over again. To the point that you feel so fucking annoying.
Then you hire someone to do it for you. Because you just can't do it anymore. And I think the sweet spot is, though, this is interesting. Because, you know, I have multiple businesses.
Yes.
And this very last, the very newest business has come so easy. Because of the 25 years of work I put in.
Yes.
So now I get it. We want to get there. We want to be there instantly.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to have to go through that. Now I get it. Now it's easy.
You can do now. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we see everything out there. And we see one person who has this like great success.
Mm-hmm.
She's like 24 and she's like a multimillionaire. And she's telling us all that we can do that too.
Yes.
If we just do these few things. And I'm like, actually, there's probably white privilege involved.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
There's probably some kind of like...
I shouldn't say for sure. But
yeah. Like not always. But I think like often.
Mm-hmm.
Often. I mean, the ones I see.
Yeah.
And she's telling me how to do it, but she's pretty, she's thin, she's white, and likely she's maybe had a more privileged upbringing, most likely. And I'm talking about the rule, not the exception to the rule. There's always the exception to the rule. But I'm like, that's not going to work for everyone.
No, no.
So then we believe and we think and we buy into, and then it doesn't happen for us.
It is... It's so interesting because when, again, it comes back to that external validation. We start looking at something that somebody else has and we go, I want that.
I want that.
I'm just going to follow exactly what they did to get that.
And they're selling me the steps.
Mm-hmm.
They're selling them to me.
But it doesn't work for you.
No, because I'm not them.
Exactly. Like the funniest thing about learning how to sell, learning how to market, learning how to like understand your voice and all this sort of stuff. It's like, yes, you can learn to a certain degree from other people.
Yeah.
But a formula is not going to work for you that worked for somebody else.
Yeah.
Most of the time it's trial and error. Like you want to get really good at selling, get really good at copywriting, like get really good at understanding who you're working with and like where they are in their life.
Yeah.
So you can
speak to them. Yeah.
Not in a manipulative way, but you can actually understand.
Like know your client.
Yeah.
Like know your, I think people say that, right? They call it niche marketing and knowing your, and that avatar.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a way that people have made it it's very businessy language, right? But it does make sense. I understand that that makes sense. But it is really ultimately like knowing the heart of the person that you want to work with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, and I mean, like that.
And then just talking to them. Yeah. Sorry.
No. That's okay. It becomes so intricate too, because right then we need to like look at where we're projecting things into there, and like we have to bring our excitement and what we want and how we want to work with people and how those people get best supported and how we can speak to them, and then like it becomes a very big thing. But that's one thing that people, like I hear marketing people say all the time, just like, you want to get good at selling, get good at writing, like get good at telling stories, get good at showing up consistently, get used to getting out of your own way, get like, heal your shit.
Yeah. Do you know what is really helping me? I'm going to plug Heather Morrison's Deliver Your Best public speaking course. That course is like therapy. And a public speaking course, you will have to face every single insecurity that you face in marketing.
Right. Yeah. It's the same. It would be very similar.
Yeah. I feel like a public speaking course is the way to get over those things you have in marketing, those fears you have. Wait, because you're so uncomfortable going up to the person and saying, "Hi, I'm Tammy. I'm a photographer. I don't really know what the Well does. We help women." I've never nailed that elevator pitch down.
Right.
It's the insecurities. It's that voice in your head. That's the stuff you need to get over in order to sell.
Mm-hmm.
It's all your own work.
It is. It, and like, no formula is going to get you there. No amount of courses. Like, yes, there's
information,
skills and systems that you can learn in there and practice and implement some of them. But really, when it comes down to it, it's like doing the work. And coming back to the point that you were just talking about with, you know, usually there's privilege involved when we look at all of these different things. There's a couple people that do a really good job of speaking to this. So one is my coach, Rachel. There's another one, Simone Grace Soul. She's amazing.
Yes, I think I follow her.
Yes. Yes. And also Emily Brandt. She runs, I think I've got her name right. I'll double check it. But she runs a course called, or a community called the Decolonized Coach.
Oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, they all have really great information on just being able to understand how our privileges and our upbringings and all of those sorts of things and like all of our experiences affect how we market as well and how we are marketing to people. And usually we're coming at it just thinking about our own experiences or our own privileges, and we're not looking at it from, oh, what might this other person be experiencing that maybe doesn't look like me, or is maybe struggling with different things than I am, and how can I make sure that they feel supported when they're coming into my world?
Yes.
Because that's a big piece that I think people miss, is that when we're looking at our ideal clients and we're creating these avatars, we're coming at it from mostly our own privilege and understanding, and we're not actually factoring in where might these people have had different experiences. How am I creating and fostering environments, including in my marketing, that is going to make them feel safe to come into my world? Mm-hmm. And that is like a whole other realm of work to dive into. But I'd say that's an area, that's a huge area. Once you get kind of like, once you start looking at your marketing and do a breakdown of, okay, what is ethical here? Am I giving people consent? Am I giving them choice? Am I giving them autonomy? All of these things. Then like the deeper level is looking at, where are my privileges playing into this?
Interesting.
I think before, people could just lump all the fears into one, throw it out there, let's do some manipulation tactics, whether we're aware of it or not, and just funnel everybody in. And it worked on a broad scale, right? Because it was praying to a lot of large, basic fears that people have. But now it's such nuanced thing. Yeah. And like, you have to have this understanding and like, do the work yourself and have this deep compassion and be able to look at things from
multiple perspectives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about those three again really quick. Not really quick, however long we want, but we have the
consent.
Consent.
Yes.
And And I know these aren't, this is Rachel, the stuff that you're working with her on. So there's consent, there's choice and autonomy, or those are kind of the same.
Choice and autonomy are kind of the same things. So a clear example would be, have you ever gotten on a sales call before where they won't let you leave the call without like a yes or no, and they're asking you to go get your credit card? They're like, yeah, okay, so how would you like to pay today? And you're like, wait, what? I'm paying today? How, when did this happen? And then you're just sitting there awkwardly going, oh my gosh, I don't know how to tell this person, like, no.
Because they are trained to not give you a second to say no.
Or they're trained to let you sit in silence. That or that. It's like so awkward.
It's uncomfortable. They make you, either way, their goal is that you are uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And that discomfort turns into a sale.
Yes. Or there's also the, let me, it's like a clear pathway to show you how I am your only solution. And so how can you say no to me?
I feel like it's funnel marketing. I've always thought that's what funnel marketing was. I know that there's probably an ethical way to do funnel marketing.
Like you're talking about, like
there's like, they bring you in through this like pain point, and then they take you down this where you realize this is the only way that this can get fixed.
Yeah.
And then end is a purchase. And there's like, I had a friend say to me once, like, how can I make this, like, what do I need to do to make this a yes? Like, she's like, she does not take no for an answer.
Right.
She's been trained to not take no for an answer.
Which, again, that's kind of like an old way
it
of
is.
Marketing.
Yeah.
And like, it's not to shame anybody, you know, and those people have done very well for themselves for a reason. And certain people will be like, oh, well, that's great. Good for them. Right. Like they don't take no for an answer. They're just like a go-getter, you know, but
I don't know. I feel like it's like the patriarch and masculinity.
It is. That's what it is. It's not actually.
I'm like,
It's not actually that. It's like, yeah, you're a go-getter, but at what cost to somebody else?
And I think a large part of it was that it's the only way it's been done. We started talking about like more ethical marketing, trauma-informed marketing.
I've just honestly seen that in the last like probably 3 to 5 years as it really started to amp up. I know it was happening before that, but... it's becoming a really big thing, which is why if you want to get on top of marketing, like, look at this stuff.
Yeah.
Because if you're following the old way of doing things, that is falling.
That's on its way out.
It definitely is.
Yes.
And
it's a very vulnerable thing to do, to not pressure or push someone into buying your product.
Yes.
It feels very uncomfortable to not have control.
Mm-hmm.
So you have an offering, you've done all this work on the branding, you've got your language, you figured all it out, you did all this work, and then you're releasing it out, and then you're not controlling the end result. And now we're like open and we're not afraid. We have to pay our bills, but we're not afraid. Our business might fail, but I'm not afraid.
Right.
I'm not afraid. I can't be afraid because then I'm like fear-based. I feel like there's so much pressure now to like not be afraid, but like we're really afraid.
And that's okay. I should have said that earlier. Like with any of like the scarcity or the fear or lack of mentality, it's fine to have those things.
That's,
it's not about
natural.
Getting rid of them entirely.
No.
It's about looking at it so that you can get to a point where you can hold both of them. Where you can go onto a call and say to yourself internally, like, oh, my business really needs this right now. Like, this has to come. But I also trust that if it doesn't come from this person, that it's going to work out and it's going to come from somewhere else.
So let's just, for a second, like, we have a product to sell.
Mm-hmm.
We have a business to run.
Yeah.
We need to make money because money is fuel. And it's the only way that our business can run. Just like our car, we have to put gas in the car, put gas in the business.
Yes.
We get that. We need to make money. We're not having a hobby. We're not building a hobby. We're building a business.
Mm-hmm.
But it's how we communicate our offering and what choice we give to our potential client.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're not thinking this is the only person and the only sale and I have to hit this sale or I'm not going to believe in myself or my product must suck.
Yeah.
My offering must suck. It's like this person may or may not need my offering. And
mm-hmm.
I want to work with people who actually need it. And it will actually give them the results they want. So I have happy clients and I've helped someone. So rather than everyone, I want actually people I'm going to help. And I'm going to give them the option. And if they don't buy in now because they felt so safe with me, maybe yes. they will a year from now.
I have that happen all the time. Whenever that happens, I just go, you know your timing best. And I want you to trust that. I never want it to be something that you come into that it's a stress point for you. This should be a fun experience. And so I want you to come in when it's going to be fun for you. So like, yeah, whenever the timing's right, come back.
Because you want to work with, you want it to be fun.
Well, and
I want to work with people that I'm enjoying work. We're enjoying working together.
Exactly. And I think if we look at the flip side too, when we're like so desperate for a sale and we're just like, okay, this person, or we're coming at it from like, I'm not going to take no for an answer. If we start to flip it and look at, well, what does that yes, that maybe should be a no for somebody, do to them? Because if it's a point where they are financially strapped, yeah. and it actually means that it's going to cause a huge fight in their marriage or something like that, or it's something where they're not actually going to be able to pay a certain bill and they're... because they're giving this here because they feel so like desperate.
And then who does the resentment get attached to?
Exactly.
You and your business.
Yeah.
And your product.
Or there's such, it puts such pressure on you to
deliver.
Exactly. So that's part of it too, is being able to, when we look at it that way, like we don't want people who aren't ready and willing to work with us, or that it's not the right product, because that happens for people too, right? Where it's just like, yeah, everybody just come in, sure. And it's actually not the right fit for somebody and it's not going to deliver them the results. Well, like that's going to be a nightmare for you potentially. So like, why would you want that?
Yeah.
And again, that's layered so much with the scarcity and money and all of that, and like worthiness and all of that stuff. So it gets really complicated when you start to look at it and break it down.
There's a lot of big feelings involved.
Lots of big feelings, yes.
Because we don't ignore feelings anymore. Yes. Feelings are healing. That's my therapist, my massage therapist. She does myofascia. She's amazing. She's a picture that says feelings are healing. And I was like, I don't fucking want to feel. I don't want to feel because then it's going to hurt. But I think that's what we have to get comfortable with.
That is so much of what marketing is. Because then if we look at it from the other side of us just like showing up in marketing, there's a whole other realm of feelings that come up with being seen and, you know, putting our voice out there, and potentially like what happens when we have somebody who doesn't like something or unfollows us or says something to us. Like what if, you know, it's all of those things too that are a whole other realm of feelings. Yeah.
And I think that's why this is why it's so much more comforting to feel like we have some sort of control. Mm-hmm. And that's what non-ethical marketing, I'm just naming it non-ethical, I don't know. That's what that side, the more patriarchal model, the model that we've been in for years and years and years, leans into that you can have control. You can get the results. This is how you do it. And we're saying, be open. Give them choice. They have autonomy. Mm-hmm. This isn't the end of the world.
Yeah.
Not fear-based. Yes. And that's uncomfortable. So we're essentially, the world is shifting and asking us as business owners to be okay being uncomfortable. And we're already so freaking uncomfortable that we just want to control something.
Yeah. It's just
and that's why it's painful.
Yeah.
So we totally validate all your feelings, listeners. We validate you. We know that it's hard, but it's worthwhile work. And I think when you get to the other side of it and you start to have, you're working with those clients or you're selling that product and it's actually helping people and it's actually doing what your why is. Like everyone, I feel like when you ask someone what their why is, it's always so like, I want to help people.
Yeah.
Or I want to see this change or offer this change in people. And when you see that happen, you think, hey, that is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So it does. It's that whole shift you have to go through. And then you see the result and it's slower than you want it to be. But you figure it out. You do figure it out. And then those same people start coming to you. And then you do have that consistency. You do have the consistent income. And then here's the goal. Here's the goal. The goal is to get to a point where you don't have to market so hard all the time.
Yes.
Because you have a brand that people know and they recognize, and your language is consistent, and your client is consistent.
Mm-hmm. And you get, like, the beautiful thing is when you give people great experiences, those are your best marketers because they are going to refer you. I have operated for 10 years with, like, I don't know, maybe $100, $200 put into paid ads before that I was just like messing around with. It's all been referral marketing.
Referral marketing, my dad always said, as a like entrepreneur for 45 years or more than that now, but he said, it's don't worry about the people outside of your door. He had a physical business. Mm-hmm. He had a physical mechanic shop.
Okay, yeah.
And he said, I don't worry about the people outside of here. I just take care of the people in my door. Mm-hmm. Those are the people that really matter, the people in my door. So I think of it even with a virtual community or, you know, it's like, I want to, with the well, I want to care the most for my members. Mm-hmm. They are my number one. And then externally, we can tell people what we do, but if they want in or they don't, that's whatever it is.
Yeah.
But our members are our people. They believe in us. They bought in.
Yes.
They're the people who would tell others. That's going to be a lasting client membership.
Which is such a good point, because I think that's where a lot of people will start to look outside of their current clients.
Yeah.
Because it's this, I want more. I need more.
I need more clients. We're not successful. We need more.
Exactly. So instead of taking care of their clients, they're so focused on
growth.
Exactly. And you start looking at, okay, well, how do I get, or even followers, right? If you put it at that, start to go, followers. I need more followers. I need more followers so I can get more people in the door so that I can get more people paying me. And then what ends up happening is it just turns into this, again, vanity metrics, and you're not actually taking care of the people who are currently paying you, and they don't have a really great experience, and then
they tell 20 people.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, how's that going to work out for you?
Oh, okay, this is so good. I think, do you want to finish us off with something? You had a look on your face there.
Yes. I wanted to come back and, sorry, it's just like all over the place.
That's how we roll.
I wanted to come back to the success thing that you said.
Yeah, let's like talk about that, and that'll be our ending. That'll be our closing statement.
So I think that's a really beautiful thing to look at is your definition of success when we're looking at anything, whether that's like our, you know, how many clients we get on a certain sign up, how much we're making in a year, or how big our audience is, any of this sort of stuff. This was one thing that I learned from one of my coaches, Jessica Seeley, and it was about like laddering. She called it laddering. Rachel calls it small, big, and, or small, what is it? It's like basic, covers the bases, like a really good goal, and then like, holy shit, this blew my mind goal.
Yes. Okay.
So when you start to, for example, with a launch, make some goals, right? And it's like, oh my gosh, I did this last year. I was like, I'm going to get 12 people in to this program. And it was one of those things too, where it was just like, I'm just going to think about it. I'm just going to like manifest it. And it's going to, I'm just going to
call it in.
Exactly.
Call it in.
And I was, I don't know what I was doing. I was really naive. And
I think you were normal. But
yeah. Didn't happen. I got 2 people in.
Yeah.
And after the launch was over, I realized, oh my gosh, I could have handled 4 max. If I would have had 12, I probably would have had a nervous breakdown. So when we look at setting our goals, I think there's a couple things to look at. Like, what is actually realistic for us in terms of our capacity?
Capacity, yeah.
Like, always look at what's actually realistic in terms of your capacity. Because you might be setting goals for you 5 years down the road where you have a team.
Yeah.
And like systems and procedures, everything in place. If this is your first time running something that like new, no, don't try to go for like sold out.
What you're seeing course. Other people saying that they're selling.
Exactly.
Just ignore that and do, create a goal for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Define success for you, not for what you're seeing.
Yeah. And I think something to look at even is, so like if you were to go, okay, what's the small one? The small one is going to be like, this is like, I believe I can get this. I know I can hit this no matter what.
Okay.
So let's say for that launch for me, it would have been 2 people.
Yeah.
And like a really good, like, okay, this is like a great launch would have been like maybe 6.
Yeah.
And like blow my freaking socks off. This would have been unbelievable. That would have been like my 12th.
Your 12th
goal.
Right. Which was your lowest, your start.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So if we look at it that way, and then I think even if we look at it, if we break it down into what's even just success mean for me in launching this?
Yeah.
Does it mean, because for that launch, I busted my ass and I shared stories about myself that were so vulnerable because it was all about a program all about worthiness.
That's success.
Right. The way I showed up, because I showed up continually, I was doing emails like 3 times a week. I was showing up with posts every day. And I just like gave it everything I had. And I was so proud of myself for that. And I think when we look at it, even break it down separate from the numbers, what does success look like for you in marketing? In how you're showing up? Because that needs to be celebrated before we can actually start to really celebrate when people come in the door and pay.
I feel like that is going to be so good, because when you listeners out there, that's going to be your question that you're really going to ask yourself and meditate on.
Yeah. I think it's such a powerful shift to even look at. I'll end with this, looking at marketing and showing up consistently, because I think this is something that people have a huge issue with, is showing up consistently.
Because we don't feel like it.
We don't feel like it.
We have to do it anyways.
We're too busy. It always gets pushed to the back burner. And the thing with that is, if you're pushing your marketing to the back burner, you're actually pushing, like you're saying that your goals and your growth doesn't matter. That's what you're showing yourself. And I understand that that's nuanced, because of course there's things with like people being afraid to be seen, people being afraid to express themselves. I'm not saying you have to like go out and share a bunch of like really vulnerable stuff, but just start with showing up consistently for yourself and look at what would that look like in a successful way that's within your capacity. So is that a post a week? Is that 3 posts a week? Is that 3 posts a week and 1 email? Mm-hmm. Like, make it actually realistic instead of being like, well, the experts say that I have to show up 5 times a week and I have to show up every single day on my stories and I have to write 4 emails. Pare it back. What's your small, like, what's your doable every week? What's your, like, oh man, if I hit this would be great. And then what's your, holy shit, I just, like, blew my own mind this week with how much I showed up.
And this is what I heard you say that I want to actually, you and I could talk forever. I'm actually going to end with this, I think, is I'm not marketing so that I can get the clients in my door. I'm doing this for myself because I care about my offering and I care about my future, and that is why I'm showing up consistently. The measure of success changes. So instead of it being all about the external, it's about the internal.
Yes. And it's about believing in yourself. You're showing up because you continually believe in it, and it doesn't matter what anybody else is saying about it. That's the cherry on top when you have the external validation, but that belief has to come from inside.